I'm the business editor at ABC News, so I work at the headquarters in New York City. I work with all of the different news programs at ABC in some capacity. Most of my work you'll see on World News with Charles Gibson and on Good Morning America. And I cover business and economy for the network, if that makes any sense. And I got that job. Actually, I've had it for about 2 years now. Before that, I was a producer, writer at CNN, at their financial news network, which has, I guess, been shut down since I left. And before that, I was a writer at WNBC. And after my graduation from Columbia.
You graduated from the University of Missouri with a degree in journalism, and then you came to work for Learfield for a while and helped guide us into digital waters. And then after that, you went to get your master's at Columbia?
That's right. I was in Seattle for about 5 years and did some dot-com stuff. And after the bust of dot-com stuff happened, was consulting a number of big companies on internet marketing issues, and decided I wanted to get back into an actual newsroom and be a journalist again. So the easiest way for me to make that transition was to spend a year at Columbia University here in New York and get my master's degree and spend a year writing and reporting in New York. And it worked out. I, in addition to getting a master's degree and getting to write and report for a year, found a new home in New York. So,
now, I think you said you are the financial editor for World News Tonight?
That's right, for actually the whole news division. So anytime ABC reports on business or the economy, I'll undoubtedly have had some hand in it in some capacity.
Now, the last time you and I spoke, I think you were in some sort of an assistant role. Has that, is that changed?
Yeah, I got a promotion about 6 months ago when Bloomberg had made me an offer and ABC wanted me to stick around. So
you're not talking about the mayor?
No, no, not the mayor, the financial news company. But it's owned by the mayor still. So I guess while he didn't actually extend the offer, it was proffered by his lieutenants. That makes sense.
Well, I want you to come here. Let me give you a digital hug. Come here. To congratulate you. That is so cool. You are the guy for World News Tonight, which millions of us watch every night.
Yeah, and you know, broadcast, especially television, is a team sport. So I'm one of many cogs in the wheel that is ABC News.
Now, before I forget, when we were setting this up, you said something about, my God, I've been so busy the last 2 weeks. Tell folks what you have been doing for the last couple of weeks, because I think that's particularly on topic for the stuff I'm interested in.
Yeah, you know, World News has been going through a lot of changes in the last year and a half since Peter Jennings announced his, I guess, fight with lung cancer and died. The show's been going through a lot of changes. We got two new younger anchors and an anchor team at the beginning of the year. And when they started doing that, ABC News decided to add really a project to what World News is. And it's a webcast that happens every day at about 3 o'clock Eastern time, which is distributed live on the web and then lives on forever on abcnews.com and in iTunes. We were really the first news organization to work with Apple. This was before the Steve Jobs Pixar deal with Disney, but we've got a good working relationships with the folks at Apple, and now several million people a week actually download and watch news programming on their video iPods. And so for the past 2 weeks, I've been filling in for a guy who's the producer of that webcast while he was out on vacation, and so I've been kind of doing webified traditional news broadcasting, I guess, webcasting.
You know, going back to the time that you and I first hooked up when you were coming right out of school, could you have ever imagined a time in which every major network newscast ended by saying, now on iTunes?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I mean, the change has been really quick, and I don't really know what the catalyst has been other than people finally understanding. It's probably just getting broadband in their own homes and realizing you could do a lot more with this. And then, of course, you've got now some appliances that actually allow people to pretty easily get a hold of this kind of content, and whether it's audio or video or enhanced content, actually sit down with it on the bus or the train or in a parking lot or the mall or whatever and kind of look at it. So we're finally getting to the point where people can really, you know, watch this stuff anytime, anywhere, which was the nasty, cliched tagline for pretty much every web project that started in 1995. And now it's coming to fruition.
All of the networks seem to be moving online in a very aggressive way, particularly in the last 6 months maybe. But I don't think any maybe more aggressively than ABC. Now, you're obviously involved with this. Can you tell us about some of the things that you're currently doing or that we should be looking for, or is that too proprietary?
I think we can keep it fairly general. I obviously can't mention specific projects, but I know, you know, in the next year and a half, probably the whole move from the network standpoint is going to be using a lot of the content that they generate that's not ever shown to regular viewers and putting it out in some form or fashion. I'd expect you're going to see traditional network news organizations distributing product in new venues, specifically via a lot of the portals that are out there right now that are hungry for broadband and video content. And eventually those kind of portal sites like Yahoo, Google, .Mac, all of the rest of those things will be just as much a valid network as the traditional networks are. In fact, maybe more so, because they'll not have the burden of maintaining exclusive affiliate relations. They just go direct to the consumers of the information. So you'll probably see ABC News in a lot of different places where we're not the head brand, but you know, we're one of many content providers to these virtual cable networks that are popping up all over the place. And we'll probably also be more video on demand than we have been in the past. So there's all kinds of interesting things happening. I don't know if you've seen the new Yahoo Finance page, I think one of the best places to see kind of an example of this idea of an aggregation of interests is on Yahoo Finance, where they've got a video player now, and there's content there from ABC News, everything from a show that we produce the Market Open and the Market Close called Money Matters for our little video on demand effort called ABC News Now, and a Money Minute, which is something that we produce every day for all of our affiliates. And so you'll see ABC News there on their video player, and you'll also see Smart Money and Forbes.com and all of these other finance and money reporting brands that want access to the people who go to Yahoo Finance several times a day. So that's probably the model we'll see in the next year, I think.
Now, I know you don't and can't speak for ABC, so I'll ask this sort of, you know, as your own personal take on it. Sure. The whole phenomenon, you mentioned Yahoo, and this week they announced the guys at YouTube hired the CFO from Yahoo to come over. I mean, the whole YouTube thing has exploded, and it seems like in the last couple of months, folks have sort of decided, by folks I mean the major media folks, this is not some goofy thing that's going to go away, and we should embrace it and be part of it. Do you have any sort of personal Dan Arnold thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, it's amazing where you're seeing YouTube. I think NBC did a deal to distribute clips of some of their programs via YouTube. Good Morning America once a week actually picks a YouTube video of the week and puts it on the broadcast network during one of their segments. So it's interesting that user-generated content is getting so much interest. I think from you know, just putting the journalist hat on, a lot of it is dreck. It's like, you know, kids karaokeing in front of their, you know, $100 webcams. But there's something to be said for that, and I think that a lot of the times they're creating a fantastic, you know, forum, and my guess is the power of that kind of venue, we won't know until something happens, which will, you know, really force it to be a community of change. I mean, can you imagine what would have happened if YouTube had existed 5 years ago and had the popularity before the 9/11 attacks. I mean, I think you would have seen an amazing amount of interest and participation in that community of people reacting to and discussing the events of those days, and it may have actually been a force for change or created a kind of political forum that would have changed the way the government reacted to those sort of things. I think it's really important to see that venue is just starting up and will probably not come into its own in a substantial way until there's an election or a terror attack or a war where people all of a sudden, you know, use YouTube as a method of getting their message and their thoughts out.
Well, I think from the London subway bombings and then the Indonesian tsunami, I don't think any major news organization is turning up their nose at this kind of video anymore. I think they're trying to embrace.
They're soliciting it.
Oh, they're looking for ways to tap into that.
Yep. And, you know, think about this. I mean, any major news organization, the New York Times, USA Today, the BBC, ABC News, NPR, have hundreds if not thousands of people who work for their news divisions. And in the past, the faces and voices of the news divisions have been the correspondents, producers and editors and secretarial and administrative help and all the rest of it have been people to support the efforts of putting those folks on the air. I think in the new age, you know, certainly after the London subway bombing, there was at ABC a kind of network-wide push to have everyone who works for the news division get a cell phone with a camera on it. Just for the instance, you know, someone walking down the street, something happens, it's a way of witnessing the event and providing that to a viewer, where traditionally it would have taken, you know, sending a satellite truck and professional crews and all the rest to get it on the air. Now it's something where an admin who happens to be in, you know, the right place at the right time could actually provide an image that is definitive for a specific event, which is pretty profound.
We will come back to some of those toys in a second. I want you to keep that journalism hat that you put on for a second. Keep it on for just a couple of more minutes. Mm-hmm. If MU or the Columbia School of Journalism, schools of journalism, if the professors there asked you to come back to give a lecture on journalism in the 21st century, which is not an unforeseen thing, what kinds of things would you talk about these days?
I'd say that, and this is again based on my own experience,
sure,
not representative of ABC's viewpoint, but every person who wants to be a journalist, I think, should probably still consider getting some sort of professional training, if nothing else, to know and understand the kind of important constructs of what journalism is. I think, you know, user-generated content is great, but there is always going to be a role for editors, people deciding which stories are more important, which things need to be out there, and those sort of things. But the real important thing for young journalists is, you know, providing themselves with the tools and understanding to do all of the different jobs. I mean, in the past, you know, if you wanted to go into journalism, you often had to pick, do I want to be in broadcast? Do I want to be a magazine reporter? Do I want to work for a daily paper or a wire service and all the rest of those things? Those walls, those divisions are coming down. Newspaper reporters will have to learn how to be video editors and will have to learn how to shoot, video of some sort. Television producers and editors need to know how to write in, you know, AP style, because quite often, in addition to filing for whatever platform that they happen to be on, they're also going to have to write an 800-word summary that goes up on a website somewhere. So I think the challenge now, especially for journalism education, is the idea of, instead of kind of tracking people in certain ways, making sure that everyone's trained to be competent in all the different formats, whether it be text or video or audio or any of the other things. It's all kind of coming together.
Dave Weiner, a blogger, the father of RSS and some would say podcasting, has said written on a couple of occasions that he thinks that colleges ought to include a Journalism 101 class, just like we used to have civics. that everybody that comes through college from this point on ought to have some basic grounding in the fundamentals of journalism.
Maybe it shouldn't be called fundamentals of journalism. Maybe it should be a return to teaching an idea of civic obligation.
Good point. Really, good point. Yeah.
You know, why call it journalism? Why not just call it civics? And the idea is, if everyone has access to a way to get out an idea, it's important to understand what the implications of those things are. So, you know, it's certainly something that's not happening, as far as I know, on college campuses today. There's not a real push to making people understand an obligation to the community. And, I don't know that calling it journalism is necessarily as important as it is, you know, instilling in people the idea that when you have a platform, being truthful is something that's vital, because obviously words, images, and altered words and images can have an impact on people's lives in a number of different ways.
Let me swing this back in a more personal direction. The last entry on your blog, assuming I have the correct one, was May of 2004.
Yeah, I haven't done anything at all online.
That's okay. You've been busy. You've been busy.
Yes.
Are you reading any interesting blogs these days, or are you too busy for that?
It's something where I think that's a good question.
No, it's an easy one.
It is an easy question.
It's a yes or no question.
I don't read specific blogs. I look to the aggregators,
like Feedster,
Technorati,
Dig,
all of those things tend to be a nice way to keep an eye on what's bubbling up out there.
Well, I count that as reading blogs.
Okay.
Nobody can keep up with all the blogs.
Yeah, but you know, at the same time, I'm not subscribing to any one specific person's blog.
But you're watching the blogosphere in toto, so.
Sure. Yeah.
What about before I leave the subject of blogs, will we ever see danarnold.com come back to life?
Oh, probably at some point. I think it's all a function of having
hours in the day.
Well, a few hours in the day, and also a feeling like there's something something to say. You feel like you want to have an idea or a concept behind it, as opposed to just putting it up there.
Right.
And I think at this point, I'm not exactly sure what I want to say, or for that matter, probably what my obligations are as someone who's associated with a specific news organization. What I could say, you know, there's some danger, of course, in talking about my life experience. Just because you get some insight into the things that typically might be of interest or potentially construed in a negative way for an organization that I appreciate and get paid by.
Good point. What about podcasts? Are you keeping up with that? Are you listening to any podcasts on a regular basis?
You know, my iPod, the things that I subscribe to are typically ABC News programming. And the reason I'm doing that right now is because a lot of people inside the organization are generating unique and new content for podcasting. There's a thing called the ABC News Shuffle, which Jake Tapper, our senior national correspondent, and few other people contribute to on a regular basis, which I think is really interesting. It's certainly targeted instead of at the geriatric, typical kind of network news consumer, at a younger audience. I watch Lost, and so being able to access the episodes via iTunes is fantastically important, I think. It's amazing. I've got a friend here who never saw the show, didn't obviously TiVo it or record it at all while it was on, but once he discovered it, subscribed to both the first two seasons, watched them all on his laptop computer as he was commuting around, and is as caught up as anybody. So I think it's interesting. That's obviously not a podcast per se, but it's a way, kind of a shared DVR experience that a lot of people are getting into, which I think is kind
of cool. Most of the podcast type stuff that you're consuming now is from ABC or other mainstream media.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the New York Times Front Page podcast, I think, is pretty cool. It's certainly a way to, effectively read the front page of the paper of record without having to, annoy people on the subway with a broadsheet.
I would challenge you. I would challenge you to look beyond what you know our big mainstream media is doing. There's some really interesting stuff happening out there, and yet I know there's only so many hours in the day for you. Technical follow-up question: what sort of hardware are you toting around these days? Laptop, a mobile phone, iPod. Tell us about your gear.
Well, Blackberries are of vital importance inside ABC. Everybody has a BlackBerry, and that's the way you do email now. So everyone has those all the time. It's addictive. I have a Nokia camera phone, and then I also have some sort of pocket PC device, which I haven't really figured out how I want to integrate it into the flow of things. I got rid of my laptop because I've got far too much stuff on my desktop now. I have to figure out how I want to deal with that, but I'm seriously considering one of the new MacBooks as a potential way to kind of get back into mobile computing, just because I think they're finally getting really user-friendly.
Your old pal Steve made the leap into MacBook land earlier this year. So,
which one did you get?
I was an early purchaser of a MacBook Pro. It's the Intel.
Oh, great.
Heats up to several hundred degrees centigrade, but nonetheless.
As long as it doesn't explode, you're fine.
Well, we replaced the battery early on.
Good.
Is there such a thing as a typical day for you? I mean, can you tell us what that might be like?
Yeah, because I cover business and the economy, I'm typically in the office by around 8 o'clock. The government economic reports come out typically at about 8:30 in the morning. I'll then talk to some economists at some of the major banks about that morning's reports, see if there's anything worthwhile or interesting about them, and typically write up a kind of wire story that's for internal consumption only at ABC.
Is it cool reports to call up and say, "This is Dan Arnold from ABC calling"?
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is, because it's such a small world, I mean, an economist, frankly, are not all that impressed with anybody who doesn't, you know, live with a spreadsheet in front of them all the time. You have a little bit less gravitas than if you're calling someone for kind of a traditional news story. But, you know, you get a group of 15 or 20 different people you're calling on a regular basis, and they're typically fairly into talking about the day's news.
So you make a couple of phone calls to some honchos over at the Department of Economics. What else goes on for you during the day?
And then it's jumping right into kind of the editorial flow at ABC. There's a daily meeting for World News at 9 o'clock where kind of the agenda is set initially, and then there's a network-wide meeting or call that happens at 9:30. So usually for an hour there you're involved in talking about what stories are important, how things are going to be covered, who's doing what. And from there, that kind of launches the rest of the day. If World News is working on a piece, I'll usually work with the correspondent and the producer of the piece to get them access to the right interviews and kind of do some initial reporting for them. And, of course, if there's some big economic news that comes out that day, we have .com, which requires people to file for it all the time, write up a .com piece before noon, probably sit down in the announce booth and talk to the folks at ABC News Radio and give them a few actualities so that they can run stuff on the radio network. And it kind of goes from there. And usually the day will wrap up at about 7 o'clock Eastern time when World News goes off the air. And throughout the day probably we'll have gotten a few calls from Good Morning America about how they're going to handle the next morning. So it's an interesting day. It's certainly one that's busy.
Well, now all of your fans watch AB, or certainly I do. I watch World News Tonight every night, hoping that one night I will see you sitting in that little sort of seat off to the side of Charlie Gibson.
Yeah.
But I never see you.
My office is one floor above the studio, so unfortunately, I'm typically not sitting down there. I might walk through the shot from time to time, but not often enough to look for me.
All right, one more personal question. It is more than just miles from Columbia / Jefferson City / Springfield, Missouri to Manhattan. What has the transition over the last few years been like for you? Do you plan to stay in New York? Can you talk about any of that?
Yeah, sure. I'm at this point, New York is definitely my home. It's actually not as big a transition as most people who haven't lived in New York think. New York is just a bunch of really small towns crowded in really close to each other. And so, you know, I live on the Upper West Side in a neighborhood that is really about, I walk out my front door and everything I need is within three blocks of my house. Unlike small town America or middle sized town America like Springfield, Missouri or Jefferson City, where a lot of life is still anonymous and done in cars, you know, the guy I buy my coffee from in the morning and paper from knows me. If I'm not there every morning, will ask where I've been, what I'm up to. You know your dry cleaner and your grocer and the guy who sells you your milk and all the rest of it. So it's actually a very small town in a way, which is surprising, I think, for most people. So I think it's someplace I want to stay for a while. It's definitely interesting here.
Good. Do you have any colorful Dan Does Manhattan stories for us? Have you been mugged or met anybody famous, that kind of stuff?
No, I've not been mugged, but the gym I go to is littered with famous or near famous people. So
Drop a name.
Let's see here. John Lithgow was working out on the elliptical machine next to me.
Get out!
And he's really tall and inappropriately sized for elliptical machines, I think. But I don't know what you're going to do about that. And Tony Danza did some pull-ups on a scaffolding in front of me one day. I was like, who is this jerk doing pull-ups on the street? And then it happened to be Tony Danza. I don't know. Very strange.
Well, you sound appropriately blasé and cool about it all, so I'm glad you have made that transition.
Well, you know, a few B listers, I guess, does not an A lister make.
Is there? I could go on like this forever, but I know you got stuff to do, and it's a holiday for you. Is there anything else that you would like to share with my six listeners?
I don't know. Just best wishes, I guess.
We are very proud of you. Those of us that have known you off and on over the years, I mean, I'm not the least bit surprised that you are scratching and clawing your way up the ranks of a big corporation like ABC News. But it sounds like you're having fun and you're living in a great city, and we miss you.
Well, it's the same way. I don't get back to Missouri often enough, but when I do, it's definitely a lot of fun and seeing people and kind of being back there is great.
Now, the next time I talk to you, maybe a year from now, you'll be like, you know, the executive producer of ABC World News Tonight. So will you take my Skype call then?
Almost certainly. And I think there's going to be a lot of changes. I mean, the next month with the introduction of Katie Couric on CBS is likely to...
They've got a new anchor at CBS?
They do, on the way.
What happened to the other guy?
Well, he's now on HDNet, hooked up with Mark Cuban, and so who knows what will happen. Maybe Dan Rather will make it back to prominence someday.
All right.